For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The Texans are the best team in Texas, and we're going to talk about all that and more on this edition of The Bullpen. Hello and welcome to The Bullpen. As always, I am James Roy. With me is Tom Chavarria. Tom, how are you doing today?
I got to say, this is the first game all season where I felt like James Roy. I was disappointed.
What?
This was the first game I was a little disappointed. This is going to be a weird show from the standpoint that I technically am a win is a win type guy. You learn da 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 da. Not this one. No. This one left me with a little sour taste in my mouth.
Are we switching shoes this week?
Maybe.
Walk a mile in each other's shoes? Okay. Maybe. I hope you're at least a size 11 because I'd rather not hurt my feet trying to squeeze in them. But anyways, I get your feeling there, right? Like, just going right into it, this game, I tweeted as much. I was like, I don't want to jinx it, but like early on, I was up 14-0. I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun Texans football game, and the score kept getting higher for the Texans. And I don't think I'm gonna be at like as bad as I've been in the past. But man, it was not like we're up 34-10. Like, I think Houston Stressens captured it best early on. He was like, we're up 7, but it feels like we're down 10. And that was kind of the vibe. I mean, it's the same themes. I don't think we're going to talk about anything new this week as far as why it is, but it just continues to be. And I like the bit that Cody Stoops was putting out there. In this past week, Bobby Slowick did his presser on Thursday, and he gave the marvelous quote that football is football. It's just what it is. Football is football. And so every time that he made a play call situationally, Cody Stoops would just post a picture of Bobby Slowick that said, football is football. And he's like, going hurry up on 3rd and inches just to throw a 10-yard out. Football is football. But, I mean, I get that this will probably be maybe both of us expressing some frustration with this game. But I'll start with Nico Collins. All week leading up, you know, he was cleared 100% before last week's game, apparently, is what they were saying. He practices this week. It's put out right before the game that he's full go, no limits. It didn't feel like he was in the game a lot. Like, when he was playing Nico Collins ball, but it felt like they held it. Like, that first play he ran, and then he was on the bench. And I think a lot of people were concerned that maybe it was the same thing. That's a similar play. He exerted himself really hard to get down there on a play that was called back on a penalty. But what do you make of Nico Collins' performance and why he maybe wasn't in the game as much as we thought he was going to be?
I think it's part of my disappointment. I think that they did the right thing by holding him out of the last game to, you know, get him a full complement of reps this game. And again, this might be the Texans just being ultra conservative in the sense that health is paramount over everything. And the last thing they want to do is push Nico Collins in a game that they don't need him to win, because they didn't need Nico Collins to win it. But you're kind of starving to see this offense be a glimpse of what it could be. And we just haven't seen that. We've seen the offensive line struggles, and we've seen some of the struggles getting the ball, you know, moving the ball, and thought that Nico Collins could help solve some of that. And here he is. He's back. Everybody's excited about Nico being back. The first play, boom, you see exactly what you hope to see. And then you see very little of it after that. And it's just kind of, it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, is this how we're going to be game to game? Is there a point where eventually they cut him loose, where we're taking the, you know, the training wheels off? Cause this game felt like the offense sputtered, and a lot of it for me, it, like you said, same themes, but the one theme that was supposed to change was Nico Collins, and I didn't feel like it did.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people that were in different, you know, tones and connotations saying, oh, you know, Nico Collins is basically going to save Bobby Slowick's job. Nico Collins comes into this game. The general thought process in my mind was like, Nico Collins stretches the field, so Stroud can take those deep shots, and defenses have to respect it because Nico Collins is Nico Collins. And so another thing to speak on is that first play, yeah, it was a really long play. He was targeted behind the line of scrimmage. There was very few plays that they targeted Nico Collins down the field on. And both of them that come to mind, one was a drop that the Cowboys challenged late in the game when the game was pretty much already sealed. And then the other one was that interception that CJ threw behind him. I mistakenly called him Sims because I thought it looked like 82, but Sims was inactive. So that was really, I'm going to own that one. That was dumb on my part. But to speak to that, I mean, we made a big deal of Nico Collins being back because he hasn't played a lot with Joe Mixon, as you've said, as has been passed around a lot, and just what he brings and how he could be the key to bringing this offense back to a level that's more acceptable. And I don't think that that is out of the picture. I think that this has more to do with playing a lesser opponent and actually, by some miracle, because I can't say it was on the offense's effort, especially not in the second half, but by some miracle, putting up enough points to be far enough ahead of a team that's not very good that you just really don't want to push Nico to be like, if there was a point late in the game where that game was close, I reckon they probably might have pushed Nico just, and to some extent, I mean, like I said, there was a late target that he got down the field. They wanted to see what he could do, but they didn't need him, as you said, in this one. But I don't think that's out the window that his presence could change this team. But this next slate of matchups, even these next three games with the Titans, Jaguars, and then the Dolphins, is not a trying schedule. And so I don't know if I would expect – obviously I would expect at some point Nico's just – they're not going to be thinking about his injury and they're just going to let him go. I don't know where that is, but if it is matchup-based, we might not see full-on as Houston Stressons refers to him. I don't really – I like – as far as nicknames go for Nico, I like 12, but – I mean, we might see Freako Nico, as Houston Stressen says. It might be weeks before that happens, depending on how the Texans want to handle it. And that's a little frustrating. I mean, that was supposed to be something to get excited about, something to get this offense going. And I'm hopeful that maybe against the Titans, they'll at least show us something, target him down the field. But I mentioned Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has been, I don't think I'm exaggerating here, the absolute best addition the Texans made this past offseason. And with the context of how bad the offensive line has been, even more so. And that's not to diminish what Daniil Hunter has done or what Stephon Diggs was doing before he went down injured, but I'd have trouble finding anyone to argue with me on that statement. That being said, what do you think made Joe Mixon's game go really well? Was it because last week he ran for 50 yards on like 25 carries? It was ridiculous. He just couldn't seem to find any space in that Lions defense. And then this week, it felt like a knife through butter. Is it defense dependent? Do you think that he'll get it in spite of the offensive line as long as we're not playing a tough run defense? What do you think is the formula that makes the difference? Is it as simple as the Cowboys are bad and the Lions are good?
I mean, a lot of that has to do with it. Obviously, you know, run defenses are ranked the way they are for a reason. The Lions is a much better, well-run defense than the Cowboys. I think that you see that. All teams have been running up and down the field on Dallas all season long. They're not built to stop the run. They're built more or less to play from ahead and stop the pass. And I think that's been spoke to on different broadcasts with the Cowboys where they've been exploited. This is not the way that defense is constructed. So the way to beat them is through the run. I think the Texans did a good job of getting out in front that way and just leaned on them the entire game, just staying just far enough, keeping them at arm's reach. And while effective, it's not the sexiest win.
Not at all. And I kind of alluded to it in the way that I asked the question, but I mean, a deeper concern is that, like, obviously right now you're going to face your Cowboys. I reckon the Titans and the Jaguars might also not be the best run defenses, which will give the Texans some very clear leverage to get those wins if they so choose to take them, as we've known the Texans to maybe not necessarily want to do that this season. But they can get those wins with the run game. The question becomes is that when you get to the point where you're making a run, is Joe Mixon on offense as the heart and soul and only thing capable of moving the offense enough with an elite defense? I alluded to as much in the game. Just watching this game, I can tell if the Texans are going to make a Super Bowl run, it is going to be on the merit of the defense. The defense will be what carries the Texans to the Super Bowl. Unless Bobby Slowick, the offensive line, I'll even throw CJ Stroud's name in there. Those are like my three things that are off enough to have a significant effect on the Texans' offensive production. If any two of those things come together and one of them has to be the offensive line, I think this team can make a push and not have to just rely on the defense. But I like what Joe Mixon has been able to do. And like I said, I think he's the most valuable addition the Texans have made. I think it's a disservice to him to not be better on at other facets of the offense so as to give him a chance to get back to the Super Bowl. I mean, Mixon's been to the Super Bowl, lost with the Bengals, and I think that he's an even bigger part of this Texans offense than he ever was of the Bengals offense. I don't know how. I mean, obviously, I know how with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and Joe Burrow. It's kind of hard to shine, and that's a good segue into the next point. Maybe that's just it. Is that he has shined so bright in this? Is that a concern for CJ? Because I think it came into the year, a lot of people thinking about the Joe Mixon addition were like, yeah, but we got Stephon Diggs and CJ Stroud's our quarterback and, Nico Collins and Tank Dell. Mixon might be an afterthought. Let's just hope he can get the run game going enough in order to let the other guys do their thing. And it's not really been that this season. But what do you make of CJ's performance with no touchdowns, an interception, not his most polished day. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure Cooper Rush outthrew him. But, I mean, Cooper Rush was throwing the ball literally every down that the Cowboys had it. So I'm not going to – it's a very different 300-yard passing game to give up than, like, say, Zach Wilson last year or, Desmond Ridder last year. Those are different 300-yard passing games. But what do you make of C.J. Stroud having another, game?
I think it looks very differently if you don't have that opening play that is negated. I think you're spinning it a totally different light. It was a good play call by Bobby Slowick, getting your number one target into the game early, getting him going right off the bat. I have a hard time with CJ Stroud, and it's because I love what he can be for Houston, the city, the team, the whole nine, long term. I understand that there are growing pains that we're just going to have to endure. I think something I spoke to earlier that I think is something for me that I think I'm going to gravitate to is that I think last year was an incredible start. But I think there was some regression to the mean. Not to say that he's having a down year or anything like that, but just he was putting together some statistical numbers that were just high by, normal standards. And now we're kind of expecting him to be this guy that doesn't turn the football over and throws for thousands and thousands of yards. And while I still think he can do that, I think there's got to be some balance to what he's facing as far as like facing a third place schedule compared to facing a first place schedule. Like that doesn't take anything away from the type of quarterback he is. It's just in the context of what he's having to deal with right now, it's a little different. So I'm adjusting to this new norm of what CJ is currently this season. I don't think he's the guy that, you know, we talked about in the preseason was going to throw for 5,000 yards and 30 some odd touchdowns. And we had crazy huge numbers for him, you know, because this is coming off the heels of a really productive rookie season. I think that, you know, the level of competition has changed. I think some circumstances with his offensive line has changed. And what I consider to be a really good CJ Stroud game last year is not what I consider to be a good CJ Stroud game this year. I say all that to say I didn't love today's game. I thought, you know, when he got rid of the ball early, he looked good. I think sometimes when he gets to the point where he's trying to hit home runs, he holds on to the ball. And there was a couple plays where he ran, which I thought was really good. I think those are plays that we need to see from him more, be willing to take 5-6 yard rushing gains and just taking that win as opposed to trying to fit something down the field, you know, and still having, you know, if it's an incomplete pass, still having, you know, a long down and distance to get first downs, that sort of thing. But it's going to be interesting when, you know, CJ, Nico, Tank, John Mechie, you know, when these guys get it cooking, because we're going to get teased with a monster game somewhere. And we're going to be like, where's that been? And I just don't think it's the norm anymore. I think this team is going to be a run first, defense led, just like you spoke to. And if you get the occasional 275-yard, 3-TD game from CJ Stroud, well, then it's just going to be a real good day at the office.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't like the trend of that continuing down, but I don't think I think that Patrick Storm put it best. It's just like he's learning to trust his O-line again. The O-line has drastically improved. There have been other aspects of the offense that have made strides to get better. And CJ just needs to adjust to the fact that, yeah, you can expect, like, he was sacked once and he was under pressure not an excessive amount of times relative to past weeks. So, like, he has to adjust to the expectation that he will have the time to make the throw he needs. And likewise, early in the game, I felt like he did a really good job of making those checkdowns. There was one point where, honestly, he chose a checkdown over a deeper shot that I thought he could have easily made. But getting back into that take what they can give and moving the ball down the field – is what created, you know, some of the drives that were better, yet, you know, on the day, and that's what we really need. A couple comparisons come to mind for CJ at this point right now, for this season, and that's not to say that I think it's where CJ is going to be in his career, but I'll spitball them at you. For a more modern take, Justin Herbert seemed like a guy who got off to a really, gunslinger start and has since kind of come down to like a, you know, the standard for a good Justin Herbert game has changed significantly since his rookie year. And then there's, if we're looking for the aspirations of the Texans as a team, I mean, the team that I think of that could be the comparison, as much as I don't know if anyone would want to compare CJ Stroud to Eli Manning, but I mean, looking at that Giants team that took down the undefeated Patriots, that is what we're kind of cratering towards if this offense can't get more production in the passing game, is like a really solid running back, a really great defense, and just going from a 4 seed all the way through the playoffs. But I, like I said, those are just some loose comparisons. Overall, I think that is, and I hate to say it this way because this sounds like I'm saying I'm glad that CJ Stroud is a game manager, but CJ Stroud's best day right now is a day where he doesn't turn the ball over. And so, I mean, that's really what I'm looking for from CJ. I'm going to stop taking the overs on, you know, passing touchdowns from CJ for a minute until we see some of those. But I mean, I think it's part of growth. I think that the shotgun start sets unrealistically high standards, and then he comes through. I don't want to dance around it, right? Like a lot of people, we criticize people for saying sophomore slump, and if this is CJ Stroud's sophomore slump, then I mean, sure, I'll take it. That's I've seen many a great quarter or a great rookie seasons be followed up by far worse than what CJ's putting on the field. So I have no problem with it. I don't like labeling it a sophomore slump. I don't feel like it's that bad, but I mean, I don't know. We're critical people, and especially now that you're on my side with this win. So we're just like probably going to be a little like not as positive about it as we probably could be. I mean, CJ, I'm not concerned about him.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And I'll say this to close out that talking point and kind of jump into the next one. I still am a firm believer that the root cause of all of this is the offensive line. As good as the offensive line was today relative to previous weeks, I mean, I don't know. If you watch Juice Scruggs play today, it would pain you to say that the offensive line did good because Juice Scruggs was a liability at left guard. And he just didn't look like he – it looked like he – I don't know, just got back from, what's that Tom Hanks movie? Castaway. He looked like he just got off the plane from the island. Sean Wilson, he's looking for a block, can't find it. It's gone. Wilson's gone. And I need you to figure out how to find a block so that CJ doesn't get wrecked. Or Joe, in this case. Joe Mixon was also not getting the best end of those blocks from Scruggs. But looking at this offensive line, do you think it's safe to say that there was a significant improvement? How do you feel about it? Like week to week, what do you think of the offensive line?
I don't understand anyone that feels like there's been some improvement by the offensive line by measuring it in the form of sacks. Because while that is a measurable stat that a lot of people want to, you know, circle and this is what determines it. To me, the fact that they only gave up one sack today did not prove that the offensive line was any better for the simple fact that CJ could not get the time that I think that he feels he needs to complete passes. While Juice Scruggs played absolutely horrible, and I think the left guard position is something that they can't coach because as much as everybody wants to make this about Kenyon Green, and we did for weeks, they swapped out Juice Scruggs and put him there, and he's been equally, if not worse. So I don't understand. And then the idea that, oh, well, you know, Laramie Tunsil's doing good. Well, no, when he's a drive-killing penalty once a week for sure, that does not equal good to me. Now, is that a norm? I don't know. Titus Howard, he was getting absolutely worked by Micah Parsons. And Micah Parsons is amazing. But to say he played well, I guess he didn't allow a sack, but Micah was in CJ's face the entire game. I don't know. I've not been impressed with anybody on the offensive line to the point that I'm not willing to say this was all about Kenyon Green anymore. Like, and I know people don't like to hear that they want a smoking gun. I think it's a bigger problem. I think it might be the offensive line coach. I think that that may need to change. I feel like we were Kenyon Green, but it may be bigger than that. And I know people are talking about Blake Fisher, maybe putting him at left guard. I don't know that he's going to play any better either, because fundamentally it's a flawed system. I do feel like that's hurting CJ. I think it's interesting that you compared him to Justin Herbert, because Justin Herbert's been playing out of his mind the last like month and a half.
Now that he has an offensive line.
Just to rattle off some numbers, the Bengals, he went for 297, two TDs. The Browns, he went for 282, two TDs. The Saints, 279, two TDs. All no interceptions.
Well, so, for context, I meant like in the season, like the seasons following his rookie season, not right now. Like Justin Herbert in the season or two after his rookie year was like, okay, like maybe we, like the fraud talk on Justin Herbert happened really quickly after his rookie season. And I mean, I think he's doing great now. But there was a stretch after where it was like, are we sure? Did we see it right? We gotta reassess. A big part of his success this season is Joe Alt. Joe Alt has been great for them.
Are the same people that called him a fraud the same people that called Jalen Petrie a fraud? Because that guy's pretty good too.
No, I don't think they're the same people. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right.
Jalen Petrie had a hell of a game today.
Oh yeah, I think that penalty they called on him was kind of it was BS for sure. Him and Al Shaair, neither one of them were close to helmet or targeting or whatever. And I think Patrick Storm also made a good point. They should add some more things to the quick review list for the NFL, because that would have been overturned really quick had it been looked at. But I mean, I don't think I've ever disagreed with you. I think we've disagreed on the level to which Kenyon Green is the issue. To which, I mean, kudos to you. I think that he's probably less of an issue than I made him out to be. But I've always believed that at least the interior offensive line as a whole has been an issue. And I as much as like you bring up Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, I think that Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard are the two pieces you can consider keeping moving forward. Just because you draft a tackle as insurance, right? So now you have Blake Fisher, and maybe you grab another one in this draft, and then you focus on replacing through free agency or the draft, however you see fit, the entire interior offensive line outside of Jarrett Patterson. I believe there's a bunch of stuff in Shaq Mason's contract that lets them get out of it after this season too. Like, so I wouldn't bring back Shaq Mason. Juice Scruggs, he could be depth if he's good enough to make the roster. And Jarrett Patterson can play center for me any day, but I'm replacing right and left guard. Cause I think what it is at the end of the day right now is that when you look at it, you can't replace everyone in the middle of the season. And I think we saw that at the trade deadline. A lot of people, myself to some degree included, wanted the Texans to make a splash move where they grabbed an interior offensive lineman. And that's just not really possible. So then you look, what could the Texans do? They could put Jarrett Patterson in, and Jarrett Patterson is the only player they put in that showed significantly better than any of the other players on the interior offensive line. So that's the improvement you can make. That's what we're going to get. That's all the Texans are going to get. They're going to have to get better as an offensive line with the group that they had before, minus, you know, whoever they dropped, Kenyon Green, to replace with Jarrett Patterson. And they're going to have to shuffle that group around and see what happens. I don't know. Maybe try Juice Scruggs at right guard and see if Shaq Mason plays better at left. I don't know. Like, that's really where they're at. But once they get into the offseason, then it's like, okay, drop Shaq Mason, get him out of there. Pick up some players that you think can better fit your scheme, since Bobby Slowick's not going to adjust to give us a spread offense so that CJ can really light it up. And then, yeah, move from there. I mean, there's a lot of nuance to that decision, and there's a lot of factors the Texans are going to have to consider. But right now, it was always about finding the one player that could be replaced that could maximize the improvement of the offensive line. And I stand by that replacing Kenyon Green with Jarrett Patterson, even though you may not agree with me, because, I mean, I agree that I'm frustrated with the whole offensive line, but the improvement you get from replacing Kenyon Green with Jarrett Patterson on that offensive line is noticeable. I mean, and it's not just sacks, right? Like, I agree with you. There were still pressures. It was not a great offensive line performance, but you put Kenyon Green back in there healthy, you know, a couple weeks ago, and that is a significantly worse performance because then you also still have Juice at center. If we go back to that offensive line configuration, you basically got Casper, the friendly ghost, and his best friend playing center and left guard. And then, you know, Shaq Mason is halfway there. And then the tackles are the tackles. I mean, I don't know. But what do you make of this? I don't want to be overreacting. I put out a tweet. I haven't really looked at it yet. I don't know how that's doing or how people think about it. But it seems like this season the trend has been CJ Stroud gets knocked down. And it feels like he's picking himself up a lot. It doesn't feel like usually the offensive line kind of, you know, like that scene from The Replacements, you know, where he shoots out the glass out of the Porsche. You know, the offensive line kind of takes pride in like being the protector of the quarterback. Like if the quarterback's getting knocked around, the offensive line is usually there. They're usually in the frame of the camera and you can see them trying to be there for the quarterback. But that hasn't seemed to be the case this season. And then when Laremy Tunsil got pushed a little bit in this game, all of a sudden every offensive lineman was right there to start a riot in Cowboy Stadium because Laremy Tunsil got pushed. What do you think? One, is that how you see it? And two, if you do, I mean, what do you make of it?
Oh, I definitely don't see it that way. Ironically, one of the guys that I think was the biggest first guy to get CJ up was Kenyon Green before he got hurt. He was always trying to pick him up. And I think it was to the point where CJ was like, yo, don't touch me. I've seen Laremy go get him. You know, the irony about your Juice Scruggs, Jarrett Patterson thing, a lot of people before Juice Scruggs got moved from center to left guard thought Juice Scruggs was playing good center. And now he's at left guard and he's, you know, a traffic cone. I don't know what the answer is. I hope that whatever it is, they figure it out. The whole narrative that, you know, the offensive line is taking care of CJ Stroud, I don't believe that. You hear the way Laremy Tunsil talks about him. You hear the way Titus Howard talks about him. They're pretty loyal to their guy. I think in certain times it doesn't look great, you know, but, I don't think there's anything to that. I'd be interested to see how your tweet's doing too.
I like to use tweets like that to gauge where the public's at. And, I literally very heavily considered not sending it. I was like, I don't know. This seems inflammatory for no reason. But I still sent it and I need to look at it, but I haven't yet. Last thing to talk about offensively before we get into a defensive discussion and then kind of bring it to a close. John Mechie, 3 receptions, 33 yards. Do you feel like after being the lead receiver last week that was, I feel like that was about the level of involvement we could have expected from John Mechie. How do you feel about Mechie showing up for this team this week with the return of Nico Collins?
I mean, I love everything about what John Mechie's doing. He's had so many opportunities to basically, like, you know, get in his own head, stop being a, you know, a constant part of this team, stop, you know, I mean, this probably is the hardest part of his entire football career these last 3 years. And at any point in time, he could have just shut it down like, this ain't it. And all he's done is just kept plugging away, kept waiting for his turn. We talked in training camp about he could be cut, you know, and here this guy is, you know, making plays for this team. That special teams play he made, unbelievable. Like, I mean, to be there to make a tackle as a wide receiver, most wide receivers don't want to do that. You know, he stuck his nose in there, put the guy on the ground. That was a huge play in the game. I can't say enough great things about John Mechie. And I think that this is all a byproduct of that. He kept working. He kept grinding. And, you know, I think he becomes that third option for this team now that we talked about Tank Dell being at the beginning of the season when you had Nico, Stephon, and Tank. I think that now becomes John Mechie. And I think it's interesting because he kind of, to me, checks a lot of the boxes that Stephon does. They do a lot of the same things. They work out of the slot. I think that both shifty guys run good routes, good hands. I could see him being Stephon Diggs light for this team. And that for me, I think that's huge because you know the focus is going to be on Nico Collins. You know the focus is going to be on Tank Dell. To have a third guy that, that you trust, that you feel that can make plays, is big.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, I mean, I was kind of shocked how quickly he made an impact after, you know, Nico was his play was called back. Robert Woods had the first reception, and then right back over to Mechie. I think he'll fit in quite nice. I think the way he plays, it's evident that he's given it his all. And I alluded to it this offseason. It's just a faster timeline. I think that Mechie was always intended to kind of take Diggs' spot when he left. And I think that he's seizing his opportunity at the level you'd expect a wide receiver three to. It's not like he's like putting up 100 yards a game. He's doing exactly what he needs to do for the team. And that's all we can really ask of him. Let's talk about the defense. And I'd like to start with this. I would say on the offensive side of the ball, the play that was most detrimental, looking at boneheaded mistakes from the first half of the game, the interception CJ Stroud threw behind Nico Collins comes to mind as the biggest boneheaded play. Jeff Okuda was activated, returned to the roster, active for the game, was not given the start. And I think we quickly found out why, maybe to some extent. I mean, I don't know how he's viewed in that building, because it felt like all offseason he was supposed to be CB2. Maybe they dropped Miles Bryant. That's a whole nother discussion. But I would say the play defensively that was the most detrimental was his coverage of, I can't remember, I think it's Turpin is the name of the Cowboys wide receiver. On that play, he literally just gets flat out burned, and then there's no one there to help him. What do you make of that? From the standpoint that I believe in that moment he was playing nickel, he's supposed to step in and be a better cover guy than Petrie is what it felt like at that point, and that's not what we got.
So I don't think the situation was fair to him at all, and a lot of people are just going to go, who's this guy? I don't know who this guy is. Or the people that did know are like, this was supposed to be like a former, you know, top pick, blah, blah, blah. But you take a guy that hasn't played all season, and then the first game he's in, you ask him to guard the fastest guy on the field, and you leave him on an island? Like, that to me, the issue is more with D'Amico Ryans not giving safety help there, as opposed to traveling the safety over the top of Stingley when Stingley had the clamps on CeeDee Lamb all night long. Like, I feel like systematically the defense in the secondary has not always performed well. And I feel like if D'Amico Ryans has a flaw in his defense, it's his secondary, because he's just not, you know, it's not his forte. You see too often safeties in the wrong position. You see coverages that don't make any sense. Like, okay, when you travel your best corner against their best wide receiver, you're an advantage. When you don't, they quickly go to that best wide receiver in a matchup they feel they can win. And I think when CeeDee Lamb got loose a couple times, it was because we decided we were going to put Kadir Holman on CeeDee Lamb and see how that worked, or Jalen Petrie and see how that worked. And we know the struggles that Jalen Petrie has in coverage. And it just seems like that's systematic. That's, you know, him going, I'm going to line my guys up and they're just going to perform, instead of putting them in positions to succeed. And I feel like in this particular instance, Jeff Okuda was not going to succeed there. The guy gave an unbelievably shifty move and was gone. And there was literally nobody in the middle of the field to stop him. I don't blame Jeff Okuda for that, and maybe I'm wrong. I'll own that. But to me, I looked at the hole and I said, "That's a lot to ask for a guy that hasn't played a down, you know, in the regular season, has no game speed, and then here's the fastest guy."
Yeah, I mean, I see it from that perspective. Just from my normal day to day work life, it's very rare to see a single point failure. So setting him up on that island is not doing him any favors, especially in his first game back. However, he does get flat out burned, and I don't know. Like you said, the context of that situation, him being a former top five pick, and even the fact that it was his first game back, is not going to be what people see when they look back at that down the road. But right now we have that context, so I'll give you that. I don't think it was fair to him. And I think that he showed a game speed that I think a lot of people were worried Kamari Laster was going to have based off of his 40 time, but the film doesn't lie. And I think that maybe Okuda, he's been working back towards it, but he's maybe like knocking the rust off in terms of what it's like actually being in game and covering someone. So like you said, not really fair to him to put him in that position anyways, but that's what they did. And he got burned. It was really one of the only, only not so bright spots for this defense. I mean, outside of that, I can't really off the top of my head think of anything that went too terribly wrong for the defense, at least that wasn't inflicted by poor offensive play or, you know, field position shifting. I mean, the defense played pretty lights out. One thing to say is anyone who's watching the stat sheets, like James, Cooper Rush, you know, threw for 340 yards. Like, how do you justify a defense being good allowing that? And Tom, how would you address that?
I think that was a philosophy that, you know, D'Amico Ryan's kind of employed. It was a bend but don't break type scenario. He's like, I know that my defense isn't going to give up touchdowns. They'll give up field goals. And I think that's what he kind of played to. There was a lot of underneath stuff to the tight end. There was a lot of little outs to running backs and you know, wide receivers. They did a lot of things at the line of scrimmage. And I think the Texans tried conservatively to keep everything in front of them, not to give up big plays, especially after what happened to Jeff Okuda. So from that aspect, I don't care if he threw for 500 yards if they only scored 10 points. I mean, those yards are kind of hollow, the stat padding, if you will. To me,
which is not a new thing in Dallas, I mean.
Not at all. So to me, you know, with the game kind of out of hand, I look at, you know, things like, well, what did they rush for? I don't think they rushed for 50 yards. I don't know what the number was, but it wasn't much. And I think CeeDee Lamb might have been their leading rusher, you know. And for me, that's a win. So I think the Texans did a really good job from that aspect. D'Amico Autry played phenomenal. I think when we talk about Jeff Okuda, I think you got to look back to D'Amico Autry. The first two games after suspension, people were like, well, this was a prize free agent pickup, and why is this guy not doing anything? And all he's been is lights out since that. I think there is a period of time where you have to adjust to, you know, from the practice field to actually playing game reps. And I hope that that's the same thing for Jeff Okuda.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at Cooper Rush's stats, right? He threw the ball 55 times. And he threw for 350 yards. If I gave my quarterback the ball 55 times to throw it and I didn't get 300 yards, I'd be pretty mad about it. I mean, kudos to Cooper Rush for being able to do that, considering that he's a backup. I think I told my wife my pro comparison for Cooper Rush was just Jason Garrett, just like solid backup that's played for the Cowboys. I don't know. That's like what I've got. But – I mean, he put up 350 yards on a defense that's more one of the more, you know, defenses in the league. I don't feel Tim on that, but I don't like you said. Hello. And yeah. All right. Do you have anything more to say in this game before we kind of bring this thing to a close?
No, not really. The Texans did what they were supposed to do. You wanted to see them do it in grander fashion. I guess I'm a little spoiled in that aspect. This was a game that I thought, you know, the last, you know, primetime game, I thought they could really shine. And while the box scores look okay, I watched the game and I wasn't like blown away.
I mean, I agree. I think that at the but I mean, I expect more from the team at the end of the day. So that's where I'll leave it. I mean, I think that CJ will improve. I think the only thing out of if I'm looking at the big three issues offensively between schematics, you know, offensive line and CJ Stroud not being as good as he was last season, I think that all of those can get better except for the offensive line. So, I mean, I think there's hope that this team can develop and progress to get good enough to at least not absolutely disappoint us in the postseason. That's where I'm going to leave it at for now. Thanks for listening to the bullpen or watching, depending on which one you're doing. Sorry, I got something stuck in the back of my throat. Jeez. But if you are listening, you can find us on YouTube to watch. And if you are watching, you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Just type in The Bullpen, a Houston Texans podcast, and that is where you will find us. On Instagram, I'm giving away a hat to my subscribers. So if you are down to pay 99 cents a month to potentially get a piece of Texans gear at the end of each month, I'd love for you to sign up and subscribe. Also, if you want to go see the Texans play the Titans later this week, I will be doing that giveaway. I'm pretty sure I'm going to do it on Twitter, just Twitter. I've tried doing combined ones, and I've definitely done one on Instagram, so I think I owe it to the Twitter people to do a Twitter Texans ticket giveaway, so make sure you're following for that. I am at James Roy NFL on Twitter and at M1 Texans Fan on Instagram. Tom is at TCTom1 on Instagram and Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we are the Bullpen. As always, thank you for listening. Stay classy, Houston. And vamos, Texans. Thanks for tuning into The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.